I'm Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing. A president's legacy is shaped in part by images. So our great-grandchildren's idea of President Obama will be shaped by the eye of Pete Souza. For a certain set of Americans, it's easy to conjure his most famous shots. Sasha hiding behind the couch in the Oval Office, the president running down a bright East Wing hallway with Beau as a puppy, the Situation Room during the killing of Osama bin Laden. Pete Souza has had a resurgence of fame thanks to his funny, sad, and undeniably pointed Instagram posts. He juxtaposes shots of the ex-president with the latest Trump news. When the Muslim ban was announced, Souza posted a picture of Obama laughing with a young girl in a hijab. When Trump refused to shake Angela Merkel's hand, Obama showed up on Souza's Instagram feed, embracing her. These and other posts have earned Souza a huge fan base, 2 million followers, and one of the best-selling photography books of all time. But despite his association with Obama, his first White House photographer job was with a very different president, Ronald Reagan.
You moved to D.C. when?
I moved to D.C. in 1983.
And Michael Evans was the chief White House photographer then.
Yes.
And you came on when he was with Reagan, and you were part of a staff of people.
Yes.
What in your mind has changed in terms of people's relationship to a camera now that cameras are ubiquitous and in everybody's pocket?
Well, I think what it does is I think every person now thinks that no matter what they're doing, it might appear on the internet somewhere. Maybe they're more suspicious now of, you know, how they act and the gestures they make.
But when you were working with that group of people...
When I was working with that group of people, by the time I came in during Reagan, people were not fazed by me being in the room taking pictures. People just went about their business.
But it was much more cumbersome, the process, relatively speaking, back then. You're loading film into a camera. Was lighting an issue, the sensitivity of the lenses?
I don't know that it was more cumbersome.
Right.
Yes, you've got to carry extra rolls of film in your pocket. That may be the only cumbersome part about it, is you got to load every once in a while.
You have to light Reagan differently than you have to light Obama.
No. In both instances, I'm trying to do almost everything in available light. And never doing anything with lighting.
Is the first thing you said to yourself when you were in the Oval Office, let's examine the available light situation?
Of course.
Do they have good available light there?
They have good available light in the Oval Office, but not in like the Situation Room,
right,
or the Roosevelt Room. You know, sometimes of those rooms are not lit very well. And
it's like,
you know,
a submarine.
Yeah, and from a photographer's standpoint, it's like, shit, I don't want to have to spend a lot of time in this room because the lighting sucks. But the Oval Office, the other thing that was great about the Oval Office is the lighting in there would change depending on the time of the year. And like, for instance, when the leaves dropped off the trees and the sun was lower on the horizon, you'd get this incredible light at different hours of the day.
Like a magic hour.
And it would only be there during, you know, like December, January, February. And then the sun gets higher and you're not getting any direct light into the Oval Office, then it becomes more flatter. So I was always looking forward to the winter months for the lighting reasons.
In your childhood, in your earliest recollections, what was the first time you had your hands on a camera?
I did not really take pictures until I was a junior in college.
Really?
But here's the thing that, you know, you sort of go back to your childhood and you think about things that maybe you did have an interest and you just didn't even realize it. In 1965, my parents took me and my sister to Washington, D.C., and we did all the tourist stuff. And there was this book called The Living White House that we got, which was like all the rooms in the White House. There were all these color photographs. It was put together by National Geographic. And there are some candid pictures of LBJ in there. I just thought it was the coolest book I'd ever seen. And I used to look at that book all the time. I mean, it's still at my mother's house. And so there was something in the back of my mind that the whole White House thing really appealed to me.
Were you political when you were young?
No, not at all. Not at all.
You went to BU.
I went to BU.
You were studying journalism?
I was. I wanted to become a sports writer.
And then you went to Kansas?
Went to Kansas State University for graduate work because they offered me a teaching assistantship in photography.
In photography.
But it turns out the best thing about Kansas State for me was they had a great daily newspaper, a college newspaper, but they behaved as if they were, you know, a real newspaper doing real journalism. So I started working for the college newspaper.
So the first time you use a camera to take pictures is your junior year of college?
Yeah.
It's a very quick hop from you picking up the camera for the first time to you teaching photography.
I fooled a lot of people.
Tell me about that.
How'd you do that? Well, I mean, people think, oh, you graduated from Boston University. You know, that's a big-time school. And, you know, they thought that I knew what I was doing. And I was still learning. But I knew the basics of photography. And so I was teaching a basic photography class at K-State.
But when you pick up the camera for the first time at BU, what about it did you say to yourself? To me,
it was magic. Shooting a roll of film, the whole business of rolling that film up onto the reel in the dark, and as you're shaking the tray, the image starts to appear on the paper. And I was like, this is what I want to do. Mm-hmm. You're in control from start to finish. You're the only one involved in making the picture, in developing the picture, and then in printing the picture.
And what did you like to shoot back then?
Probably trying to do something with musicians.
Uh-huh.
I was not very good at first about photographing people. I was very shy, and it was...
Being shy affected how you shot people?
Well, it was like, sort of like, to me, it was hard to relate to people and explain to them why I wanted to photograph them, and I was self-conscious about it, and that was the biggest hurdle to cross. Knowing how to deal with people in a way that they would be comfortable to allow you to be in the room while you're taking photos.
Did you identify right away that that was an important component, that you needed to make people feel comfortable to photograph them?
I needed to make myself feel comfortable to be there. And the kind of photography that I was doing was not, my guess is when you're photographed, it's a photographer that wants to do a portrait of you and put you in a setting, and there's lights involved sometimes, or they're directing you a little bit. And the photography that I wanted to do was fly on the wall stuff.
Right.
I love,
which I've tried to turn my portrait photography into that. I say, please don't make me stand here and find some pose like you're painting me. I would, every time I work with a photographer, I'd say, let's talk. Tell me a story about you, or I'll tell you a story about me. And then I'll stop. I have the sense to stop talking, but I'm still, that pot is still simmering of where we're at in terms of what we're discussing.
Yeah.
So I'm distracted from my own self-consciousness. I need to take my mind off the fact that we're taking my picture.
Right.
Because I hate having my picture taken.
Right. Well, and so do I. I mean, the...
You do?
I can't... I don't like the way I look, you know. But for me, it was take what you're saying a step further. I didn't want to do a portrait at all. One of the first projects I did when I was just starting out at BU was there was this dance class, older people participating in this dance class. And I just kept going back and back. Every day I would go there to photograph because I wanted to sort of just like get the essence of what was happening there. Wasn't a big subject at the time, but for me, learning how to do photography, this was a good situation to be in where people eventually didn't care that I was there, that I was taking pictures. I could get close to them. I could get whatever angle I wanted. So it was sort of like a learning experience of, you know, just doing fly on the wall pictures.
So when you're done at Kansas, where do you go?
So I'm done at Kansas State, and I end up working for two small newspapers in Kansas, which was a great training ground.
Why'd you stay in Kansas? Because there was a job there for you? You liked Kansas?
Mostly because there was a job there. One of my friends used to joke with me, because one of the newspapers I worked for, the Chinook Tribune, had a circulation of 6,000. The town was maybe 15,000. It was an afternoon newspaper. And one of my friends used to joke, if a dog crosses the street in the middle of the day, it might end up on page one. Because there was not that much happening.
Small town.
But it was a really great training to be to every day have to go out, and you'd have to come up with a page one photo, a sports photo, and a business photo every single day.
You had to do all
the right. I was it.
You were it.
I was it, and that is probably the most pressure I ever had in my life to do that every day. But it was just a great training ground because you
how what did it force you to develop?
It forced you to take the most mundane situation and try to make an interesting photo that when it's in print, people are going to look at and want to read the caption and maybe learn something new every day. I can't say that I succeeded every day, but I tried, and it meant a lot to me.
So 1 year of that, then what?
And then I went to the Chicago Sun-Times. So I went from a 6,000 circulation daily newspaper to 600,000. And it was one of those, you know, somebody recommended me for the job, and I ended up getting it. And
which specific job? Sports?
So general assignment photographer. So I did a lot of sports, news, features, whatever. And it was basically taking exactly what I did at the small newspaper in Kansas and trying to apply that to the big city.
So you're like a kid in a candy store.
Oh, my God. It was so much fun.
Yeah,
like covering big-time sports, big-time news. You know, there was the mafia was really big then in Chicago, and that was a component.
Pete, do me a favor. I want you to photograph me on my left side. Okay, that's my good side, right? I don't want to ask you again, Pete. Don't take a picture of me on my right side, all right? We have no problem with each other.
I gotta say, you got the Chicago accent down pretty good.
So, Sun-Times for how long?
So, Sun-Times, not very long. So, let's see. I think I went there in December of 81, and I left in June of 83 because I got this call from Michael Evans.
Now, did Evans explain to you, did he offer any insights into why he called you? He knew your work? Had you won awards for your photography?
He happened to have a photo editor working for him, White House photo editor, who I knew and had been following my career.
And so they're looking for people they think are hot.
They were looking for one person. I sort of fit the bill. And, you know, my portfolio then was pretty good. I had won some award in Chicago, like Chicago Photographer of the Year or something like that. So I'd gotten some attention in the industry. Photojournalism is a pretty small community. You sort of know everybody. And based on the photo editor's recommendation, Michael brought me in for an interview and, you know, offered me the job.
Presidents from Johnson on chose their own photographer.
Did you have to
meet Reagan in order to pass muster with him?
No, I did not. It was Michael. Evans made the call. Right. I think I met Mike Deaver, who was then deputy chief of staff and was sort of overseeing the advance office and the press office and stuff like that. So I think I did talk to Deaver beforehand, but it was up. Michael made the decision.
Were there ever moments of kind of wistfulness where you missed the range of what you got to do before, basketball and mafioso and everything? You got to do pretty much what you wanted. Did you feel a little bit after some amount of time there was a limitation to it, or you never felt that way when you were in the White House?
I was conflicted. I mean, I was even conflicted when they offered me the job because I was thinking, well, do I really want to do this? I was not a fan of Reagan's. Things were going really well in Chicago. So it was a tough decision to make.
But what helped you make that decision?
What helped me make the decision was what you always hope is that you're making pictures for history. And if you're in the White House, but there were times when I really wished I was, you know, back
elsewhere,
in Chicago.
Right.
Yeah.
Was shooting Reagan different from Obama beyond their personality? I mean, the one guy's a movie star.
Yeah.
Briefly.
I mean, every once in a while with Reagan, he'd be in the middle of the meeting and he'd like see you taking pictures and like wink at you or something like that. And with President Obama, it was like he would forget that I'd even be in the room because it was a different circumstance in that I didn't have any kind of relationship with Reagan coming in. I didn't know him at all. I'd never met him. And I didn't feel like I was totally immersed in the Reagan White House the way I was with President Obama.
Why?
Why? Because I knew President Obama for 4 years before he was elected to the presidency, already had established a professional relationship with him. Plus, I came in as the chief photographer. So this was going to, I was all in with him.
Right. Forgetting about, you know, your feelings about the person politically. I don't want to do the podcast with somebody who I don't have some degree of either admiration for or interest in.
Yeah. I respected Ronald Reagan, and I think he respected the office of the presidency. And I think because of that, I was able to say to myself, "This, it's worthy for me to be here."
Right. Were there ever any episodes that were difficult for you?
I mean, I always looked at it as I wasn't trying to glorify him. I was trying to, you know, accurately, honestly portray what was happening.
Right.
But, you know, certainly during the Iran-Contra affair, there were a lot of pictures that I made that were where he was, you know, definitely down in the dumps and not looking good and sort of agonizing of what he did, what he didn't do. And the world, you know, your younger listeners won't remember this at all, but back in 1980s, was it 86 or 87?
86.
I forget. The world was, it was on cable TV, on CNN. Sure. I don't think there
Oliver
was.
Oliver North testified.
Yeah, it was a big scandal. And
we thought it was going to be the end for him, maybe.
Right, and I was on the inside. And it was a weird place to be because even though his days were occupied with other issues that were coming up, you still have to deal with the economy. And he's having meetings on things that have nothing to do with Iran-Contra. That's still hanging.
Yeah, it's over in the air.
It's in the air every single day.
Yeah. Like, describe, when is the White House photographer welcome and allowed, and when is he not?
I think it differs in every administration. Let's go back to Reagan. Because I didn't have relationship established with him, you know, I would push for as much access as I could. But it wasn't the same as with President Obama at all. I mean, I had total access with President Obama. In a way that I didn't with President Reagan.
So Jeff Zeleny mentioned to one of my producers that Obama was curious about Reagan and asked you questions about Reagan.
Yeah, he knew I worked for President Reagan. I said to him that I didn't have the same kind of access with Reagan as I did with him. And he said, well, what was he like? I said, well, to just be diplomatic about it, he was sort of a big picture president. And President Obama said, I want to be a big picture president.
Former White House photographer Pete Souza. If you're hungry for more from inside the Obama White House, check out my interview with former Secretary of the Army, Eric Fanning.
My job is to oversee the Army. The Army budget is over $140 billion a year.
Do you think we can still afford to be a global power in the coming years?
I think we can, but I think we need to think more creatively about it, as President Obama's been trying to do. There are limits to what we can spend.
Right.
And recognizing, as he does, that national security is more than just the military. It's a whole combination of things across the entire federal budget, and there has to be some balance there.
The rest of that conversation at heresthething.org. When we return, Pete Souza tells more tales about Obama from inside the White House and beyond, and whether he'd agree to take on the challenge of the Trump White House, political differences aside. I'm Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing. I'm Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing, now more with photographer Pete Souza. You first met Obama where?
I first met Obama his first day in the U.S. Senate.
Under what circumstances?
So I was working for the Chicago Tribune then, based in Washington.
And he'd been a Chicago politician.
And
so you covered him?
No, because I was in D.C.
Oh, okay.
But when he's elected to the Senate in Illinois, and he comes to Washington, then it's on, you know, my watch to photograph him. And so Jeff Zeleny was then a correspondent in the Tribune Washington Bureau with me. He and I hatched this plan to follow Obama's first year in the Senate and do four big pieces throughout the year, and got pretty really good access to him in the Senate. And just because of that, where you're in there every day, Obama's doing this, he's doing that. This is a senator. You sort of get to know the guy a little bit. I met his family. And that 1 year kind of turned into 2 years because we went to Africa with him in 2006, again as senator. And just over time, you sort of get to know the guy. He gets to know you. He sees that you work hard. He sees the way you work, trying not to interfere with what he's doing.
Right.
So I think he appreciates.
He senses that you get it.
He senses that I get it.
Which is funny because that's very similar to a set photographer in the movies, where someone is obtrusive and where someone is kind of groping. You can see them and they're finding the ideal shot. They want you over the person that's in the foreground and the furniture and the painting on the wall, whatever. And I see them moving around. I'd say to them, we'll stage something for you for the rehearsal, then you have to go, because I only work for one camera at a time.
Yeah.
I will only perform for the movie camera. And then there were those rare people, like one out of 10, they were ninja, and they would get all these pictures, and I didn't even know they were there. Is that kind of how he felt toward you?
Yeah, and he says that in the introduction. I mean, I like the term ninja. I think maybe I start using that, because that was my thing. I think I knew how to move around and not be a nuisance. I could go right behind him and show things from his perspective, and it didn't faze him a bit because he just like forgot about me being there. Matter of fact, I got into an argument with him one time. He had this meeting scheduled with Schwarzenegger when he was governor in the Oval Office, and it was scheduled for after lunch. Okay, so at lunchtime when he ate, I'd always go run down to my office and eat at the same time so I wouldn't miss anything. So it's lunchtime. I go down to my office. I eat. I come back upstairs. Schwarzenegger's coming out of the Oval Office. They had just finished the meeting. And I'm like, what the fuck just happened? So I started like...
Did you actually say it that way to the president? You
said,
what the fuck just happened?
No. I said it to his personal secretary. I said, what happened?
What the hell just happened?
This meeting was supposed to be... Oh, he changed it to before lunch. I go, well, why the hell didn't you tell me? By this time, he's like... listening to my conversation, and he's like, what's the problem here? And I said, sir, Katie forgot to tell me that the meeting with Schwarzenegger was moved before lunch, so I didn't get any pictures of it. And he's like, no, you were in there taking pictures. I go, sir, no, I was not in there. He goes, yeah, you were in there taking pictures the whole time. And I was like, I was not in there taking pictures the whole time. I was not in there for 1 second. But he was convinced that I had been in there because he was just so used to me being around, I guess.
The president is never coming up to you, or his staff is never coming up to you and saying, don't use that, use that, don't use that. That's all up to you?
In terms of at the White House.
At the White House.
At the White House, I would be the final like editor, per se. I had a photo editor that worked with me that would send me what they determined to be the best picture. But I would always sign off on every picture before it went out into the public sphere, because I was the guy that had the relationship with President Obama, and I just wanted to be, just careful.
So it was an understanding, even unspoken, that you weren't going to make him look bad. You were going to make him look good.
I never know what that means, because I think if you look at some of this, a lot of the pictures that we made public, that I don't think they're all about making him look good. I mean, I've got pictures of him learning about the tragedy in Benghazi and Sandy Hook, where he doesn't look good,
right.
But I thought they were authentic.
Right. Is it government property in terms
of... Yeah, so every single picture that I took is now at the National Archives.
Uh-huh.
We were not allowed to delete a picture. Thank you, Richard Nixon, because after Watergate in 1974, Congress passed the Presidential Records Act that all this material had to be saved, and including photographs was one of the, not just the documents, but every photograph had to be saved. So every single photograph that I made is now at the National Archives.
Why do you think you never worked for a White House for a president in between?
Because I didn't want to.
You didn't want to. You could have, potentially.
No. I don't know. I mean, it's the odds of someone getting two calls to go work at the White House as a photographer are pretty slim. They were both accidental in a lot of ways.
How was it accidental with Obama?
I just happened to be the Chicago Tribune in D.C. when he became senator.
Right.
That's what launched me getting into the White House with him.
Some presidents, Bush Sr., for example, less photogenic. Do you think that determines what kind of a photographer they had?
I feel bad for him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he doesn't look like a...
Very stiff in front of the camera.
Yeah. He's got the glass, the big glasses. Yeah.
Not happy being photographed, it seems.
No.
And his son wasn't like that, though.
No. His son, I know 43 a little bit. I covered his presidency from afar. And he's actually a good photographic subject. You know, Bush 43.
Right.
Just because he's kind of a jokester and, you know, likes to rip people and...
Playful.
Playful. And he's a good-looking guy. Yeah.
And I'm wondering what it must have been like for the White House photographer there with Clinton. Do you think that there's times when you just go away and leave him alone to suffer with what he's going through?
I mean, I think this, you know, I mentioned before about Iran-Contra. This is Iran-Contra times 10.
Yes.
And I was... already working for the Tribune then in D.C. And so I would go to these events as a member of the press to cover Bill Clinton. And he was doing something, you know, on the environment or the economy. It was during the impeachment crisis. And all the my editors, all they wanted is a certain look from Clinton to go along with today's story. The picture was going to run alongside an impeachment story.
Yeah, they wanted a withered.
Right. And so to be the guy on the inside, oh, I can't imagine what that must have been like.
But so does the president, are there times when they just dismiss you? They say, well, let's not take pictures today or this week. You know, if he's really struggling and suffering with something like that, are they allowed to take a pass like that? Or are they obligated to leave themselves open to that every day?
It is complete. There's no like ground rules.
There's none.
There's no ground rules. It's based on the photographer's relationship with the president.
In either one of the administrations you served, were you asked to step aside for a period of time while they endured something that was bothering them?
In Reagan, it was harder to stay in the room. With President Obama, he never wants to kick
me out. He faced everything.
Yeah.
So when Bush Sr. comes in, 41 comes in, you leave.
I leave.
Yeah. Where do you go? What are you doing in that period of your career?
So for 9 years after that, I was a freelance photographer based in D.C., did some stuff for National Geographic. When Life was a monthly, I did some work for them.
What did you enjoy doing once you had your break from being in that bubble with those people? What was fun?
What was fun was trying to take the fly on the wall approach to sort of feature photography for National Geographic and learning about color and light more. You know, work back then and for National Geographic, you had to shoot slide film, which it was very unforgiving. You had to get the exposure just right. You had to be outside when the light was just right. You wouldn't be outside at this time of the day, at 2 o'clock or whatever time it is now. You'd want to be outside at like 5:30 or 7 a.m. So learning more about light and color. But freelancing was hard for me because I was not really good at marketing myself. And it was for 9 years, it was kind of up and down. I had some real highs and some real lows.
Lows how?
Lows where I wasn't getting work.
So being the White House photographer for Reagan for all those years, that's not a guarantee of some kind of a put for you job-wise.
It's not a guarantee. And I think when I left the White House under Reagan, it wasn't like I was that well known. I mean, one of the things that happened with President Obama is I'm known because of social media.
When do you recall social media becomes relevant?
Well, what happened was there's been this tradition since the Nixon days that the White House photography office blows up pictures, hangs them on the wall of the West Wing, and then you rotate them out. And people were blown away by the pictures that I was choosing to put on the wall because it was the real behind-the-scenes stuff. And the communications people came to me and they go, we need to make these public. We need the public to see
get them out
pictures.
There, yeah.
And I was the holdout. It took me like 4 or 5 months to really get into wanting to do this. And I said to them, well, if this is the way it's going to be, then I need to curate the collection. I don't want the press office looking over my shoulder, looking at every picture on the screen and saying, let's do this one. You got to let the professionals, because I had a really good photo editor who had been at Time magazine. I said, you got to let us decide which photos we're going to make public. So that's how it sort of got started. It was the staff coming to me, urging me to make pictures public. At first, we used Flickr, And then Instagram, you know, didn't even exist until the second year of his presidency. So later on, we started using Instagram, too.
What camera did you use when you were shooting Reagan?
Nikon FM2.
What camera did you use with Obama?
So with Obama, I used a Canon 5D Mark II.
And why did you switch from the one to the other?
I looked at all the cameras, and I thought Canon was the quietest. They had a what they called a silent mode. It wasn't totally silent, but it was pretty silent.
And it became essential for the work you do.
Totally essential. Yeah. And it was so much quieter than Nikon. It was even quieter than the Leica digital cameras. And so that's why I chose the Canon.
When you are doing what you're doing in between the two administrations, and did you say to yourself, you know, why am I going back here to do this again for a second hit of this? Was it, what did you tell yourself? What was the reasoning to go back after you'd done it for so long with Reagan?
Well, I think it was because I realized that, you know, Obama could be a transformational figure in our country. I liked him. I liked his policies. And he was a great subject.
Right. What made him a great subject?
I think it's his look. You know, he's tall and thin, but he just had this manner about him with gestures, with the presence of the camera not affecting how he behaved.
I'm going to ask you about that. In other words, in the way that it's, do you think that the camera truly captures the person for who they are? Or do you think there are people who are able to even fool a camera and make you think there's something that they're not, or obscure something about themselves that they want obscured that's a negative value?
People can definitely do that, but people can't do that when they're being photographed every single day,
right.
9 to 6 or 9 to 8 or whatever. There's no way you could fool a camera.
Long days you shot like that? Long days?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So, but, you know, if like I was only coming in for an hour a day or something, sure, somebody could put on a show for an hour, but not when this guy's around you essentially 24/7. It wasn't really 24/7. It was more like 12/13/7.
Yeah, that's what strikes me about Obama, is that he was a guy who, there was a certain kind of integrity to him. Yeah. That's what came through.
Well, the most interesting part of my job was that I saw him in all these different compartments of his life. I saw him as a dad. I saw how he behaved with his children. I saw him when he was on the basketball court. And I played cards with him. Most competitive guy I've ever met in my life. and the general public doesn't see that. But I saw that part of him. They sort of have glimpses of his family life. But, you know, he loved his daughters. He loves his daughters.
Yeah.
And I could see that, you know, all the time.
Did you get a sense that he, like other men who've had that job, it was painful for him not to be able to spend as much time with his family as he'd like to?
Well, I mean, one rule that everybody at the White House staff knew was that 6:30 or 7 o'clock, he was having dinner with his family.
Right.
Full stop.
Right.
Now, there were times where he'd come back down to the Oval, but he was going to have dinner with his family every night. It was actually easier as president than as senator, because as a senator, his family stayed in Chicago, and he'd come to D.C. like 3 or 4 days a week. I mean, for like Tuesday through Friday morning or something. So there'd be at least 3 days that he wouldn't see his family. Whereas when we were in town, he would see his family every night.
With the president we have now, what do you think your life would be like now?
Boy, I don't know. I know one thing is under no circumstances would I have stayed on to be White House photographer.
Who is the White House photographer now?
It's someone that had been in the Bush administration and had been Laura Bush's photographer for a couple of years.
For 43. Right.
But I don't think I could bring myself to be there and do that.
Is it a man or a woman?
It's a woman.
And do you know her?
Yes.
Your book, which I have here, Obama, An Intimate Portrait, is breathtaking. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful book. But the subject is a very attractive guy in a lot of ways, and someone who I support politically, which makes a huge difference. But
But it also appeals to people, I think, because of what we are dealing with now.
Yes. Yeah. We're looking back, going, wow, he was Abraham Lincoln compared to what we have now. Yeah. Yeah. What's a picture? Even now, you sit and go, that's a damn good picture I took.
Well, the goal is to always capture a photograph, a moment that has mood and emotion, that's composed just right, the lighting's just right, and yet I'm going to tell you there's a picture that only has one of those components that is one of my favorites, and it's the one on the back cover. It's a young African-American boy touching the head of the president as he's bent over. Because I think that tells you a lot about how he relates to, how a young kid relates to him, but also that even as president of the United States, at the behest of a 5-year-old, he went ahead and bent over to let this little kid feel his hair, which I think,
pretty much tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand. Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me on.
And I love your book. I think it's absolutely gorgeous. And you're right. It makes people wistful. It's tough.
Yeah.
Because we certainly wish that we were in a different place than we are now. But do you get to interact with Obama anymore? Do you run into him?
Yeah. Yeah. Last time I saw him was at the portrait gallery.
For the unveiling of the two pictures.
He and Michelle's portrait. And then I saw him over Christmas at he had a holiday party at his office. He was wearing a Santa hat. people say, well, how's he doing? I go, well, the thing that I noticed is it's as if the weight of the world has been lifted from his shoulders. Because for 8 years, you're the guy. Everything's coming to your desk. And despite, you think of him as being relaxed. And, that's a big job to have. And I think that he is now enjoying life.
Pete Souza's book of photos and stories from his years in the White House with President Obama is called Obama, An Intimate Portrait. It's beautiful. If you already have that one, you can pre-order Shade, A Tale of Two Presidents, his next book of photographs. It takes Souza's Instagram into hardcover, framing inspiring photographs from the Obama White House with tweets and quotes from Obama's successor. I'm Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing.